This is the Eurosnob Podcast.
All right, so I would just like to welcome everybody back into the Eurosnob Podcast. It's been quite a while, and you know what? I'll put most of that blame squarely on me, but it's good to be back. A lot's happened since the last time we've been able to sit here and vent about Arsenal. Almost 2 months, really. So, Alex, how have you been in that time? I know you've got some pretty exciting events in your life.
Yeah, long time no talk. Sometimes life gets in the way, though, man. I don't blame you. We both work crazy schedules, so sometimes other stuff's got to be put on the back burner. But no, it's been busy time. As I was telling you off air, my first rec league game yesterday, so I basically channeled my inner Giroud and my inner Iwobi. The Giroud came from missing clear-cut chances, and the Iwobi came from not tracking back defensively. So I'm hoping to move up to at least Ramsey status next week. To where
I thought you were going to tell me that channeling your inner Giroud was going to mean you scored a sick scorpion kick goal.
I mean, I tried. It was more the missing from 3 feet away issue.
Gotcha. Hey, man. At least you're in the right spot to get the chances, right?
Exactly. When it comes to energy, I press from the front. I don't press backwards, though. So once he gets past me, it's gone. But certainly on the Arsenal front and just on the general European football front, a lot has happened. Just coming off the back of a really entertaining Champions League final. But from an Arsenal perspective, I guess the highlight of the season was last Saturday, the FA Cup final against Chelsea. To cap off what is hard to define in terms of this season, but you know, let's start with the FA Cup and just kind of your general takeaways from that game and how much do you read into it and kind of your reaction to that?
You know, I think it was a hell of a way to end the season. To be honest with you, I wonder how much of it was the players thought that it was potentially Arsenal's last game. You know, I wonder if, and I think that potentially carrying over to the whole entire end of the season. I mean, the last time we spoke, we had just lost 3-0 to Crystal Palace, I believe. And went on, and since then, Arsenal went on a hell of a run. I wonder how much of it was the players kind of towards the end of the season thinking this might be Arsenal's last go around. We need to give him a send off. I mean, there are a lot of comments about how every time the players spoke of the manager, they spoke highly and how much they loved him as the manager, you know, all that stuff. But I don't know. I have a hard time reading too much into the end of the season. I mean, it's typical Arsenal, you know?
Yeah, it's one of those things where too little, too late. Except in this instance, it really was too little, too late in terms of what our primary goal was, which was to make the top four. You know, in previous seasons, we've kind of left it to the last couple games and then hope to get on a run, and we squeaked by and it just didn't work out this time. But in terms of the FA Cup, I mean, as a one-off performance, it was great. You know, it was against a team that admittedly probably came in a little bit flat just because they had just won the title. You're coming off an emotional high. You're not going to be able to necessarily pick yourself back up to where you were. But it's still Chelsea. It's still one of the most expensive teams in the world, one of the most talented teams in the world, so you can't discount that result. And the way we played was exciting for me to watch. You know, it wasn't a smash and grab by any stretch. I'd say we dominated 75% of that game, in all honesty. And I think that might even be a little conservative, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that, but yeah, it was vintage Arsenal, right? Like, we actually passed and moved, and it was flowing, attacking football, something that we haven't seen almost all season. You know, maybe we saw it in spurts for 10, 15-minute segments of a game, but to see that put together in an entire performance like that is, you know, it's really good to see. And I don't know, do you take anything away from that? Do you think that maybe Arsenal stumbled across something that we're going to continue with, or the team found something to kind of rally around? I don't know. Is there anything you take from that or see that carrying forward at all?
I see good and bad out of it. I guess the bad is kind of like what you were saying. Where was this all season? You know, and I understand it's not possible to keep your intensity level at a 10 all season. Like, there's going to be dips. The problem with Arsenal is those dips came at the worst times and went for too long. I did like some of the structural and tactical changes we've saw. I thought the way we set up, specifically in the FA Cup final, really, for me, got the best out of Granit Xhaka and Aaron Ramsey. And I think that's something that you and I had talked about numerous times. How do you get the best out of those players without limiting the players in front of them and behind them? Because as a two-man midfield, it's you kind of worry that they're going to leave a lot of space because Xhaka's not the most mobile and Ramsey's not the most defensively inclined. But that three center back system kind of alleviates a little bit of that defensive pressure to where Xhaka can still sit deep and Ramsey has that license to go forward. Candidly, going into that game, I was worried how that was going to work against a team like Chelsea, though. I mean, what was your kind of expectation going into that game, knowing that we were going to play that 3-4-2-1 setup?
Honestly, the way with this team this season, I had zero expectations other than I wouldn't be shocked if we got smoked. This team really did a number on my confidence with them this year. So for me, it was just kind of like, hey, you know what? Maybe we get lucky, get a win, and Arsenal can ride off into the sunset on a high. You know, I was hopeful, but I really didn't expect anything near the performance that we put in. So I was really pleasantly surprised by it.
When Chelsea scored their equalizer, even down to 10 men, did you ever have that sense of dread, like, oh, God, here we go?
No, not really, because I don't think I put that much kind of – I don't think there was that much pressure on the game for me. I was just kind of watching it as a – almost as a neutral, which is weird for me. I hate to say that, but
– So for you, that emotional investment wasn't necessarily there this time around?
I've been checked out since February with this team.
Yeah, no, I can't blame you. I think before the game, I had contemplated whether I was going to drive an hour up to Tampa to go watch the game with the Gooners up there, but I just didn't have a good feeling. I'm like, shit, I don't want to drive up there and then have to drive back feeling shitty about a loss. I'll just watch it in the apartment, grab a few beers, and
there you go.
I mean, it didn't work out too badly. I still got to chill at home and watch the win, but it didn't have the same feel as the two previous FA Cup finals. Just because of how the season had gone. For some reason, I think if we had cracked the top four, then maybe my excitement level would have been higher. And maybe beating Chelsea, my excitement level should have been higher. I mean, I was still ecstatic after the game. But then after a while, that buzz wasn't quite there because I started looking forward to next season and kind of the obstacles that face us now in terms of signings and clearing guys out and, you know, potentially losing star players. And then the uncertainty with Arsene Wenger, you know, going into that FA Cup final, you know, you mentioned that the players might have thought it was his last game. Did you think it was his last game, though?
Yeah, I think I did. I was pretty resigned to the fact that it was going to be his last game. And, you know, I still don't know that it wouldn't have been the right thing to do. I'm not entirely sold that him coming back is a good thing. You know, I've always been in his corner. I mean, I've made that perfectly clear throughout plenty of, you know, throughout the past episodes. And I was to a point where, yeah, it was probably time for him to go, but I don't know. It's always difficult with him, you know, because he's so cryptic in everything he says and he doesn't give anything away, and I don't know that even he knew what was going on. We all knew that it was going to be up to him. The board wasn't going to force him out. Kroenke wasn't going to force him out, even if Gazidis wanted him out. So it was going to be, how did he feel at the end of the season? And I think I expected us to lose that game, and I expected him to take a lot of shit from the fans and probably just kind of sink away. I don't know. I guess I didn't really know what to expect, but I was definitely leaning towards the fact that he was going to be done.
Yeah. I agree. I was hoping that we'd win this game and he could leave on a high, you know, leave with the trophy and then, you know, have the next person come in. But my gut, even before the game, was like, even if we win, he's going to feel like he let the club down not getting top four, and he's going to want to redeem himself. That was kind of my feeling even before the game. And after the game, I knew it was pretty much a sure thing he was going to come back. You know, something he said that kind of bothered me is throughout the season, whenever he was asked about his future, journalists asked him, do you think the uncertainty around your future is affecting the team? And he said, no, it's not. It's not. We have a strong group of players, this and that. And then at the end of the season, he's admitted several times, you know, I think what, you know, the uncertainty around my future affected the players' confidence and this and that. And I'm trying to understand the rationale of even thinking it wouldn't have affected the players' confidence. In any profession, let's say your direct superior, your boss, is contemplating leaving, and you know your future may or may not be tied to that person. Of course, that indecision is affecting you. It's affecting you mentally. You know, it's affecting you psychologically. It's affecting how you approach situations, because you might be more cautious, you might be afraid to take risks. And so I guess I would throw that to you. Like, do you feel that uncertainty was a huge factor in what happened this season, or do you look at it more just, you know, kind of tactical and formational and personnel issues?
There's no doubt to me that it made a difference. And I think that what I think happened was that the team had no idea what was going on with Arsene Wenger. And, you know, like you said, when your superior is, when there's instability above you, you're going to feel unsafe and insecure in your position. And maybe that eventually turned into a good thing for this team in kind of a roundabout way, where it took them until late in the season where they said, you know what, enough of this. We need to, you know, if he's on his way out, we need to send him out on a high note. And if he's, and even if he is on his way out, there's going to be a new manager. So they needed to make sure they were performing for when that manager looks back on this season, they're performing at a high level. You know, I think there's, it's so hard to tell because you're not in the room, you know, obviously it's just speculation, but for me, Arsene has always tried to take the heat off of his players. In every single opportunity he gets, he tries to take that pressure off of them.
Do you think, sorry to interrupt you, but do you think that's been to their detriment at times? The fact that maybe at times they haven't faced the pressure they should have?
Yeah,
definitely. Or their mistakes?
Definitely. I think they feel too secure in their jobs oftentimes, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of my thought. Like, that's also, those moments build character at times, you know, when you do have to face that pressure. So when you go long stretches of someone else taking it for you, I do wonder if all of a sudden when it is piled on you, when even the manager can't bear that full burden, and then you feel that overflow onto you, you weren't ready for it. I mean, do you think there's anything to that?
Yeah, that definitely is a thing. And I don't know if we saw the typical Arsenal, oh, the pressure's off, now we can perform, or if we saw the players coming together and, you know, making a conscious decision to really get their shit together, for lack of better words.
No, I'd say those are the right words, let's be honest. Let's call a spade, but
yeah, absolutely.
You know, I mean, before we kind of get into the ins and outs of the, you know, the long-term Wenger effect, I do want to, something that the more ardent Arsene Wenger fans have mentioned are, oh, well, look, he's now willing to adapt tactically, you know, because we moved to this 3-4-2-1. So, you know, he's shown that he can change formation and look at all the success it had. I mean, do you think it was a case where he just kind of stumbled onto something because of the personnel, just because nothing else is working? Or do you see this having some sort of, you know, any sort of long-term staying power? I mean, obviously it depends on the ingoings and outgoings, but what are your thoughts on the formation just in terms of the personnel we have and getting the best out of those players?
Well, it's always seemed like in the past that Arsene has kind of stumbled upon the best setups, right? Kind of out of necessity. He's never somebody that's been proactive in terms of changing his tactics. He's stubborn, and we've known that that's how he is. But when he finds something that works, he sticks with it. So You know, I think it was incredibly bold. I think it was very bold to move to that formation. I mean, that's not something that we really have seen out of him. And, you know, I know he's played that at some point in time. We haven't seen a back three out of Arsenal in a very long time. So, yeah, he definitely he stumbled upon it. But I don't want to give him no credit for it, you know? You know, he made the conscious decision to make the change to that setup. So I don't want to say that it's all chance.
When you look at a guy like Rob Holding and the fact that he barely played all season, like he was playing, I think he played Capital One Cup games and then a few FA Cup games as well. And I think it might have been one or two Champions League games, I don't remember. But you know, you see a guy like that and then you see how he performed in this three-back setup. You know, you do wonder like, oh, wow, we had this guy in the locker the whole time and we didn't really get a chance. But then you think, okay, well, when we played with two center backs, really Holding was never going to get in front of Koscielny and Mustafi when healthy. So, you know, doing this does provide you more defensive solidity in the sense that you have these three center backs. And Holding's a really gifted passer. Mustafi is a gifted passer. And, you know, Koscielny's not a bad passer. And then, you know, Bellerin, in my opinion, is kind of ideally suited to play a wing back. Monreal, not so much, but I think Monreal is just such a smart player that he can adapt to it, and he showed that ability. So, for me, that the whole premise of the 3-4-2-1 was you alleviate the defensive burden of that Jaka Ramsey midfield, like I said earlier, and then you also allow them to kind of do what they do best. And you still give Ozil and Alexis the free rein to do what they need to do. And then Welbeck kind of provides that pacey outlet. I don't think it works as well if you put Giroud in there, for example. I did like that Oxlade-Chamberlain was able to slot in at the right wing back position. I thought you kind of saw some good things out of him. But I don't know. Do you think it's... do you think Arsene, I know you said he kind of sticks with what's working, but I mean, do you think for the good of the club, it's the best way to go, you know, just, or do you think, you know, like a 4-3-3 or something more traditional, something like that?
Well, I think moving forward, that really entirely depends on the incomings and outgoings of the summer, you know? But for this season and made to that formation. Yeah, I mean, okay, just kind of while you were talking, it did kind of hit me. I do want to give Arsenal a lot of credit for that. You know, I know I was kind of in between and didn't want to throw too much credit his way right off the bat, but he was forced into making a formation change through the team not playing well and some injuries. He was forced into a change, and I think the changes that he did make were spot on. While my English is spectacular, so yeah, I definitely want to give him credit for that. And moving forward, you know, it's like I said, it depends on the incomings and outgoings. But one of the things that you mentioned kind of a little ways ago was how we needed Arsene to adapt if he was going to stick around. For me, it's not so much that he needs to adapt to his system. He needs to adapt his system on the field. He needs to adapt his transfer system. You know, and that kind of relates to, obviously, what's going to happen this summer. You know, sure, he can change his tactics all he wants, but I still think either way, no matter what we play, we're still a couple players short of really being a few players short from really being able to achieve our ultimate goals, you know?
Yeah. And I'd agree with that.
Yeah. Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, I'd agree with that. I think it's a great point bringing up that it's not just the on-the-field stuff. It is the off-the-field setup. It's the infrastructure. It is the transfer business. The fact that and I think this is something that you mentioned on other podcasts, like Arsenal – Arsene is Arsenal at this point. You know, he wears so many different hats in terms of, you know, he does the coaching, he does the transfers, he handles a lot of the PR. You know, it just seems like he's doing so much. And And, you know, one of the things that was kind of rumored that we might bring a director of football and we might implement all these changes. And that's kind of what maybe put a lot of people back on board with Wenger staying, is that we'd have this director of football. But then you heard Wenger's comments about that, like, oh, well, I'm still in charge of all the transfers and this and that.
What does a director of football do?
Sometimes I think I don't know if he's oblivious to the media or like how things are construed, or he kind of knows and he just goes along with it, you know, just to rile people up. I mean, I really don't know.
I think it's the latter for sure. He's too smart to be oblivious to that.
You would think so, right? The guy knows five languages. I'd imagine he knows how things are going to be construed by the media. So
he's been at it for over 20 years, so he knows what's going on.
But the fact that, like, I mean, other than some token statements in video interviews with Gazidis saying, like, oh, you know, we're looking at everything we're doing and we're going to re-examine. Did you hear or see anything that legitimately makes you think, oh, it's going to be a lot different now? There's still no director of football. I mean, it still sounds like every transfer is going to go through Wenger. Are you hearing what you need to hear to feel better at this point?
I've learned, and I think we all kind of have over the years, that it doesn't matter what we hear out of anybody involved with this club. You know, they could say, hey, we're going to spend $400 million this summer, and we're going to sell out, we're going to ship off half our team and bring in 15 new players. They could say that, but I would still expect us to come out of the summer with only signing Petr Cech. You know, we've heard so much from this club about what they're going to do and how they can compete with big clubs, but then we hear them say they can't. And the main point I'm trying to get to is that, like I said, it doesn't matter what they say to me. They need to show me that there's really going to be something different. So even if they said that they were going to do things differently and explained what they're going to do, it wouldn't mean anything to me until I actually saw them do it.
And I think that's a great point, because I think a lot of people, and myself included, are kind of in the same boat as you with the I'll see it when I believe it theory.
Well, they kind of backed us into that corner, though, didn't
they? No, they absolutely did. Like, the club can't be frustrated with how fans are reacting right now. That is something I disagree with. Like, a lot of the people on Twitter are like, oh, well, you know, fans support the team at all points and this and that. Like, no one disagrees that fans are supposed to be behind the team. But if the club is continually let you down with empty promises and rhetoric and these hollow quotes, yeah, people are going to get frustrated after a while. And you know, I think it's also something we lose sight of this because we live in the States. We're not paying the extortionate ticket prices. You know, like, if I was paying, you know, thousands of dollars every year to watch this club and I felt like things weren't changing and I felt like my concerns were not being addressed, yeah, I'd be frustrated too. So the club, yeah, obviously fans need to support the club. That's their job. But the club also has an obligation to give fans a reason to support them, you know? So I think you're exactly right. And then that we have been backed into this corner because we have felt this way. Like, after we won the first FA Cup, you're exactly right when you said, you know, we only bought Petr Cech. That was the summer to push on, you know? Like, that still, to me, was criminal negligence to not do what you need to do that summer. And now we're in a situation where we have three of our best players. No, I mean, our two best players and then another really good player. You know, we got Alexis Ozil and then Oxlade-Chamberlain all in the last year of a contract. And I'm still not sure which one we're going to hold on to. I have a good feeling about Oxlade-Chamberlain. Alexis and Ozil, I'm honestly not sure. Alexis seems 70-30 that he goes. Ozil seems more 50-50. But, I mean, let's just start with those guys because those are the more, you know, pressing issues, in my opinion. You got to tie those guys down before you really can get too excited about any incomings.
Yeah, it's – man. I don't even really know where to start with this. There's so much that is going to affect all of this. You know, Arsene's comments just in the last week or two about – how, you know, I forget who the interview was with, but they asked him about the contracts with Ozil and Alexis, and they said, you know, are you okay with running them down through the last year of their contract? And he said, yes. He's like, you sign a contract to play and give everything you have until that contract is over. And that's something he's always said. But, you know, and then he said that, and then the reporter followed up and said, so you're comfortable with them playing through the last year of their contract? And he said, yes. And to me, that, oh, man, that scares the shit out of me.
But we don't do that, though. Like, think about all the guys we have sold in previous years. Like,
right, that's true. And again, that comes under the dichotomy of what the club says versus what they do.
Yeah.
So, again, same thing with Arson. Who is Santi Cazorla? A couple of days later, we signed Santi Cazorla. Like, again, it's all that same kind of situation. So I don't really know what to take out of those comments. And it's, you know, I kind of thought that if the club were to hang on to Arsene Wenger, it would kind of give a little bit more clarity into what would happen. I assumed that they would come out and say, look, we're keeping Arsene, and here's what's changing. And actually put it out in a structured message, not through some cryptic double meaning comments in the media, leaking things to different reporters, things of that nature. But instead, they just kind of threw it out there to say, hey, Arsene's coming back, yay. And really left it at that. So I don't know where this club is at with Ozil and Alexis, Oxlade-Chamberlain, now with Hector Bellerin. I don't know.
Yeah.
Kieran Gibbs, who apparently is going to go for £15 million.
I mean,
could be amazing, by the way.
There really is a lot up in the air in terms of the current squad, if you think about it. Just starting with Alexis, because I think it's crucial you keep him, or at the very least, you sell him for as much as you can outside of the Premier League. I mean, if this club sells Alexis Sanchez it was a rumor today that he's days away from signing for Manchester City. If this club is stupid enough to sell to Manchester City, a lot of fans are going to riot. And I mean that somewhat facetiously, but also somewhat seriously.
No, 100% seriously.
Yeah, actually, I am 100%
seriously. Pitchforks and torches will be marching around the Emirates.
I would hate no to be the Arsenal Twitter guy if that happens, because the heat they're going to get.
Turn notifications off.
Oh, my God. Because so just imagine if that happened. But, I mean, I still tend to think the club isn't that stupid. So let's just assume for argument's sake, you know, I saw there was a report from Germany that Bayern are willing to pay Alexis's salary demands. If Alexis isn't going to stay, I think you take, like, if Bayern offered £60 million or €60 million, I don't know what the exchange rate is. Yeah, I got to be
whatever
honest.
Whatever it is.
$60 million. I'm not so sure you don't take it. I mean, the only problem is the way the striker market is right now, $60 million isn't going to get you much in return. The problem is Alexis has basically taken away all of Arsenal's bargaining power to ask for a higher fee, you know, just because he seems to be making it clear that he wants to go. So
see, that's kind of where I disagree. I don't think he's made that clear at all. He hasn't pulled a Robin Van Persie and said, I want to leave. He hasn't forced the club into only being able to sell it to Manchester United. He hasn't said that he's going to resign. But anytime he's been asked about Arsenal, he says he loves the club. He loves Arsene Wenger. He loves London. Like, I don't think he's put the club into a bad position at all.
I mean, again, a lot of it, we're going off of newspaper stories, so, you know, everything can be slanted different ways. I mean, of the two, of Alexis and Ozil, I always felt Alexis was more likely to leave just because, he does love London, but he doesn't love it the same way Mesut Ozil does. And also, he just has his dogs, and he can realistically take them anywhere.
Yeah, and I certainly understand.
He seems more about winning titles and all that. And you just, his body language this season, again, I'm not a body language expert, but just the way he's reacted to things, his frustration with his teammates, it
couldn't that just, I certainly understand where you're coming from, but couldn't that just be with the results and where the season was going. I mean, it doesn't – he's – okay, we could – all right. His body language when he got subbed out of – I don't know what game it was. We're up, what, 4-1, 3-1, something. The game was over, and we subbed him out in the 80th minute. His body language was the same in that game when he got subbed out as games when we lose. So is it that he's frustrated with the club and isn't happy being here? Which, you know, if you saw him and Arsene Wenger after the FA Cup, when Arsene grabbed him and gave him a noogie and Alexis loved it, you know, his body, like, I don't know that that is anything bad against the club. Right? Because he's that way when he gets subbed out. He's that way when he loses. But does that mean he's unhappy whatsoever being that way with – he could be with Real Madrid starting for them and get subbed out and still be the same way. I don't know. I kind of have in the last little bit leaned more that way on it.
I mean, I get where you're coming from. And, you know, he is a competitive guy, and I think he's got that urge to win that, you know, very few people can match. But it's just, it seems like it's been a different reaction. Like, when he's frustrated after, like, not getting a hat trick, it just seems like a different reaction than when we've lost a game. And he kind of seems to be looking around him at the team he has, and he's like, what the fuck is this, you know? So, again, with him, like, the thing is, like, you've heard, it's just, it is the summer of uncertainty, because you're hearing all these stories like, oh, he wants to go to PSG, or, oh, his agent's talking with Bayern or Manchester City. Like, it's just, it is kind of a case of previous history making me weary, you know, where we've, not to the extent of Van Persie, because that was, I mean, like you said, Van Persie made it almost impossible for us to get any value for him. But, you know, other players in previous years, like Kleb and Fabregas and Alex Song, and, you know, players like that, where they're putting out noises through their agent that, hey, I might be interested, you know, and it does make things tough. Ozil, I really don't know where to go with that. I know I feel like he, more than Alexis, has kind of integrated with the team, because he's got the other German guys on the team. You know, there's a sizable, you know, Turkish population in England. And, you know, obviously he's part Turkish, so, you know, that kind of plays into it. Like, he has kind of embraced everything about London and the club, and maybe he's a little bit more outgoing, and so maybe, you know, and also I think Wenger kind of sold him on being his pet project, really, you know? So maybe there's even more of a tie there. So with him, I don't know. I mean, the only thing with Ozil is I don't see many other clubs that can afford him that need him, you know? Where else would he go?
Yeah, I really don't know. I mean, that's such a good point, because he's not going back to Madrid. He's not going to Barca. He's not going to, I mean, you could fit him into Bayern's team, maybe.
I don't even know if he'd get into the Bayern team, quite honestly.
Not with the season Thiago just had.
Yeah, I mean, Thiago, if they're going to play 4-3-3, Thiago is the perfect midfielder for that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. Shit. Chelsea, maybe.
I mean,
honestly, that's, where does he fit in? I mean, PSG plays the same thing.
PSG,
they play the 4-3-3.
Yeah, they've got Verratti, Mata, and Matuidi. You know, you don't really need a pure number 10. So with him, I just think, like, the market is so limited that he might almost be forced to re-sign. Not that, you know, not that he doesn't love the club, or just he wouldn't have many options anyways. So
exactly, and I think for that, if we hit his wages, if we give him what he offers, or he sees that nobody else is going to offer him that wage-wise, then he'll definitely stay.
Yeah, that's kind of where I lean with that. I mean, so maybe it's better than 50-50 he stays. The other one is Oxlade-Chamberlain. I tend to think he stays. You know, I heard about Liverpool interest, but I just don't know where he fits into a Liverpool. And I just, candidly, we can offer more money than Liverpool can, I'm fairly certain.
Absolutely, and I don't see any of the other big clubs that are going to put him on the same wages that we will, really having a spot for him. I mean, who else is going to put him on the same wages? United, City, Chelsea. You know, he's not leaving England.
And I'm not sure what his best position is, so I'm not even sure, like, where you project him going to another club, you know?
Right, and that's kind of why I think he definitely stays. There was just, and that's the kind of thing, that even the speculation on that has kind of quieted down.
It was pretty heavy like 3-4 weeks ago, but then within the last week or two, like you said, the Liverpool interest has kind of died down, and the reports make it seem like he's ready to sign as an extension, like where he gets over 100,000 a week. But, you know, obviously for those of you listening who maybe aren't as active on the Twitter sphere, as Ian and myself, the latest rumors are about Hector Bellerin potentially having agreed some sort of personal terms with Barcelona, and the report is allegedly he's going to speak to Arsene Wenger about leaving. I really don't know how to read this one. I'm going to throw this one to you. I mean, can you see him leaving, given all the faith that Arsene Wenger has shown in him? And quite frankly, is he good enough for Barcelona right now?
You know what? He can just fuck off, or duck off, as Twitter apparently likes me to say, because I can't type on my phone ever because I'm awful at it. No, he can go. Get out of here. Go. We'll, you know, we have bargaining power with him, but if he wants to go, you know, hold out for 40 million. That's what Monaco is reportedly holding out for Mendy. He's as every bit as good. So hold out for 40 million. And yeah, if somebody's going to give you 40 million pounds for him, get out of here, man. But if not, sit your ass on the bench and play behind Oxlade-Chamberlain. I don't care.
I'd argue you could get more for Bellerin than 40. Because
that's fine with me. Absolutely.
He's like 21 or 22, and he's on. Yeah, he just signed a 6-year extension. You should be able to get 50 million for someone who's considerably could be one of the world's better fullbacks. He's not there yet. Still a bit inconsistent. Shows some incredible potential. And you know, again, it's one of those things where Bellerin's quotes from 2 months ago are so much different than what you're hearing now. And you don't want to read into quotes too much. They can be misconstrued, but they just kind
of, especially if they're translated too.
Exactly, coming from the Spanish papers to the English papers. But there just seems to be that old, oh, Barcelona turned my head sort of thing that we've heard from other players. You know, it just seems to be, you know, like that he's kind of had his head turned about Barcelona's interest. And, you know, you've heard the quotes about like his family has moved back to Barcelona and he feels lonely here. I'm like, dude, with the amount of time you spend doing modeling shots and fixing your hair, it obviously seems like you love London, but it goes without saying.
But can you blame a player who grew up there, came through their youth system, when Barcelona, if they start tapping you up again, right, which they obviously do all the time and never get in trouble. It's so blatantly obvious, but no one's going to get him in trouble. How do they not turn your head, though, you know? It's like Real Madrid or Bayern.
Can't Arsene sell Hector on the fact, like, hey, yeah, that you came through their system, but they didn't think enough of you to keep you. We're the ones who gave you your shot.
I guess so, but if they're going to give you 200,000 pounds a week to play for one of the top three teams in the world, that's going to turn my head. Yeah, I don't care how much faith that – I mean, it's a business, man.
Well, let me throw this question to you, because I saw this on Twitter today, and people are like, oh, when he got booed at Crystal Palace, you know, the fans – the fans don't deserve loyalty when they boo one of their players. First of all, what happened at Crystal Palace, from what I can tell, all the players got booed. Bellerin just happened to be closest to the away fans, and so the media picked up on that it was him being booed. But from everyone who was there, they said that the whole team was getting booed. But this idea that somehow, like, oh, well, you know, the fans were mean to him, so he's going to leave. Like, newsflash, if you go to Barcelona and have a bad game, how do you think the fans are going to react?
Yeah, these guys are professional players. I don't buy into that at all, that the fans booing them makes a difference. I mean, shit, even here, man, like, every once in a while you get athletes that are, oh, the fans booed us in our own building. That's not right. They should always support us. Well, sure, you can cry about it, but then the majority of, you know, your top athletes are going to say, you know what? Yeah, we deserve to be booed. We played like dog shit. You know, I can tell you that just, you know, going back to, you know, just, I know, whatever, going back to hockey, Buffalo Sabres here, I'm a homer. It happened this season where the team got booted home and Jack Eichel stood up and was like, yeah, we played like crap. We deserve to get booed. It's like, they pay money. That's their prerogative. We need to put on a show and give them a reason to cheer. You know, but that's as far as wanting to leave the club because of that, no. These guys have a thicker skin than that, or else they don't make it to that point. It's just, for me, it's Barcelona. He's Spanish. It's Barcelona. He came through La Masia. Like, it's just, it has that draw. It would be like a German player and Bayern Munich calling their name. Really, it's, you're a baseball player who grew up in New York City and the Yankees are calling your name. Or a football player from Dallas, Texas, and the Cowboys are calling. Like, it's got a draw about it. You're going to play for your hometown club.
Yeah, I mean, I can see the appeal. I think the club have no reason to sell right now, unless you get an astronomical offer. I mean, yeah, the dude just signed a contract during the season. Like, there's no reason to sell. Unless, yeah, if you get 50, 60 million, then you think about it, because there are some good fullbacks out there that I think could do just as good a job, if not better, to be quite honest.
Hey, if we got 40 and we took all 40 million of that and put it towards Mbappe, dude, I will go to England, drive his ass to the airport to get him to Barcelona.
That's the kind of personal service that anyone would appreciate. So,
if his 40 million gets us somebody like Mbappe, I'm in. See you later, Hector.
I mean, like, if you think about it, though, like, look at Jibril Sidibe at Monaco. He's a very capable right back, and you've seen what he can do with Monaco in the Champions League. There's Elside Hissai at Napoli. I mean, that guy's incredible. That guy's a phenomenal attacking fullback, you know, gets forward. Can play in a three at the back. You know, he can play as a wing back. He can play as a right back. I mean, he's a terrific player. So there are some good fullbacks out there that, like, if you needed to sign a replacement, right back at least is a position you can do so. Well, and you had Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know.
That's what I was just going to say. So, I mean, if we stick with the three-back system, Oxlade-Chamberlain was amazing in that spot.
Yeah. I mean, once he fine-tunes the defensive parts of his game, he can really be a star there. So, you know, it's hard for me to say Bellerin is a must keep. I would love to keep him just because I think he and Ox can compete for that spot. But if you get that money for him and you can put it towards a genuinely elite player, I'm not going to be brokenhearted, to be quite honest. You know, I acknowledge that he could turn into maybe the best fullback in the world, but if you can fix other parts of your team, you know, it's hard not to think about it. And another name you threw out earlier was Kieran Gibbs, and he kind of goes along with the list of players that I think probably will get shipped out this summer. Gibbs, Chesney, Ospina.
I'd be curious to see what happens with Olivier Giroud also.
Giroud, yeah, his quotes about not wanting to be just a substitute. Who are some of the other guys considered deadwood that, you know, we hear? Theo
Mertesacker may be done.
Mertesacker, yeah. Theo, maybe, potentially.
Well, I mean, he didn't have much of a role the second half of the year.
Yeah, so you could see him leaving.
I mean, Tibbucci. Well, Tibbucci. He's alive.
Apparently.
I think Jack Wilshere is all but gone.
Yeah, Jack.
I mean, I'm pretty sure, unless I was dreaming of that, but pretty sure that his Twitter profile. Yep. Twitter profile, professional footballer, Nike UK athlete, proud father to son Archie and daughter Delilah, Instagram Jack Wilshere.
He took off all the Arsenal references.
No mention of Arsenal, no red and white. It's all his Nike shots and black and white photos. So he's all but done.
Yeah. So just think of all those guys we mentioned. You could get a good chunk of money for all those guys. You know, you could get conceivably 50, 60 million that you can then apply to some top players. Of those guys, are there ones you'd want to see kept? You know, I think you and I both tried to give Gibbs the benefit of the doubt earlier this season because he started the season well, but it's just painfully obvious at this point that he's just not good enough.
Right. What is he now, 26, 27?
Yeah, he's at that age now where he's not going to get any better.
Honestly, for me, any player who's at that age, 27, that isn't an impact player for us, goodbye. The only one really out of who we've mentioned, I mean, obviously other than Ozil and Alexis, that I absolutely want to keep is Oxlade-Chamberlain. Giroud can go, Gibbs can go. Sounds like Chesney's already out the door, which he really wasn't a part of our team anyway. Wilshere sounds like he's gone. Ospina's going to be gone. Debushi. I wouldn't be shocked to see Monreal moved out. I don't think he will. I think his replacement's already here.
Well, Wenger's comments about Monreal playing a left center back make me think that he'll stay.
Yeah, I think his versatility means that he's going to stay. I really do. I think because he can play both. He can play that wing back and that left side of the back three.
I could see Callum Chambers going. You know,
not
with Rob Holding.
So I think Holding's here for sure. I think Koscielny's kind of his ongoing Achilles issue is worrisome. If Mertesacker's done, I don't think Chambers goes anywhere because, you know, let's just say Mertesacker's done. Koscielny's injury flares up. So you're going to be left with Holding, Gabriel and Mustafi as your back three. Do you really want to move Chambers and not have any more depth there? You know, I do think we need to bring in another top class center back. I think you want your back three to be Koscielny, Mustafi, and somebody else. But you know, if that somebody else is Rob Holding, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Yeah, I think the club will buy a center back now. Whether it's going to be a top class one or kind of a fill a void kind of guy, you know, I don't know. One name I did want to get your take on is Chesney. Now I've kind of been getting in some Twitter disagreements on this one. I've watched Roma over the past two seasons. I've seen what Chesney's done, and yeah, he's still prone to the moment of insanity, but he's also one of the best shot stoppers in the world. And he's in his prime. You have Petrček, who's getting older. Ospina's getting shipped out. And Emiliano Martinez hasn't shown me that he's going to be anything special. Why would you sell this guy for only 14 million pounds, especially to a club like Juventus? If Juventus thinks a guy is good enough to be Gigi Buffon's replacement, shouldn't that tell you how other clubs are rating him?
Is it one of those situations where he just doesn't want to come back, where he feels done wrong by the club and is just kind of over it? I don't know. I don't want to sell him because I think he should be our starting goalkeeper next year. Yeah, he gets a little bit adventurous from time to time. But like you said, he is legitimately one of the best shot stoppers in the world. Petrček, I'm done with him as a full-time starter. Ospina, even if he stays, he's not cut out for the Premier League. You know, he's a good player. He's an above average goalkeeper, but he's not to the level that we need. I was really hoping that they would bring Chesney back, but, you know,
doesn't seem
maybe
like
he just doesn't want to.
It seems like there was some sort of falling out with him and Wenger, and it almost seems like Wenger doesn't want him back more than anything. You know, because I've seen Chesney's comments. He's like, you know, I'm still an Arsenal player, and I'm probably going back at the end of the season. But it, for whatever reason, it seems to have changed, and now DiMarzio, you know, Gianluca DiMarzio, who seems to be one of the better transfer guys, seems to say that that deal's almost done. So putting aside all...
And it could be for Wenger that he likes more consistency out of his goalkeepers. He wants to know. He wants to know what he's going to get out of him. Petr Cech, you know what you're going to get out of him. It's not going to be anything spectacular, but he's got a steady baseline to his play. He's not going to do anything insane. He's not going to do anything overly risky. You know, maybe that's just what Wenger wants in his goalkeepers, and he just could never coach that out of Chesney. I don't know. That's pure speculation on my part.
Well, the thing with Chesney is, like, for the style we play, Chesney is one of the best in terms of passing out of the back. You know, he can pick out guys in midfield and kick it right to them. Cech just kicks it anywhere, and we usually lose the ball right after. I mean, his kicking is pointless, and I would have thought Chesney, a guy who can distribute the ball well, would be an asset, but apparently not. But just kind of going, let's kind of move from the outgoings to the incomings. You know, was it yesterday or the day before? I no idea what day it is anymore. It was yesterday.
Yeah, me either. Don't worry.
So
yesterday, what day is today? I have no idea.
Today's Wednesday.
Today is Wednesday. Today I have off tomorrow. Tomorrow is Thursday.
Okay, so Tuesday, Arsenal confirmed the signing of Sead Kolasinac.
I'm so glad you said that.
I know.
Sead Kolasinac.
I had to watch the Twitter video on how to pronounce that a few times, and I still think I got it wrong.
Kolasinac. Sure.
Candidly, I can't say I know much about him. I've seen a few Schalke games. What I can say is the dude is built like a brick house. He can play as a left back, as a left wing back, gets forward really well, surprisingly quick, and made the Bundesliga team of the season. To get that kind of player on a free, you got to say that's a good thing, because that means you can allocate funds to other positions and you still address the position of need.
100%. From everything that I've seen from Bundesliga, you know, from Bundesliga fans and people who that's their probably top priority league, we got to steal the fact that we got him for free. The guy has an incredible engine, doesn't quit, will fight to the last second. Good skill, good defender, good getting forward. And like you said, he's built like a brick shit house. I don't think those are your exact words, but, you know, make it a little more colorful. But
no, I liked it. I liked it.
He's scary as shit. You see that dude just standing there that he's going to scare some people. He doesn't look like somebody to mess around with.
And maybe that's and something we need some of that. Right? I mean, maybe that is a good thing.
I think so, 100%. Absolutely.
So we have locked down that left back position. Where do you look next position wise in terms of priority? We can even function on two hypotheticals, one where Alexis stays and one where Alexis goes. Where do you address things? If we're going to stay in this 3-4-2-1, or if we transition to 4-3-3, which I still think is a possibility.
I think regardless of system, we need to add another center back. We need to add a couple central midfielders. We need to add a striker, probably a wide player. I mean, this is in addition to the players that we talked about, probably gone, Wilshire's gone. We'll lose a center back this summer. I really do think Giroud might be gone this summer. So not only are you needing to replace Giroud, but you need to upgrade. So if Giroud leaves, you need two strikers. If, you know, Wilshire's gone, you need two or three central midfielders, regardless of what happens with Mesut Ozil, because Mesut Ozil, I think, is a different type of player. Obviously, if Alexis leaves, you need another world-class attacking player, but you need wide options, because I don't see Theo in this team moving forward, especially if we play the three-back system. He doesn't fit anywhere in that system. if Bellerin goes, you need another right back. And I think even if he doesn't go, you need a right back. So if he leaves, you need two. You need a couple. You need at least one goalkeeper.
You've listed a lot of positions there.
I have, and it's insane because, to me, that's a bare minimum. That's just replace the ones that you're losing and maybe add one more in that position. Like, it's all I listed was replace what's probably going to go and fill in what we were short this season. I mean, I don't expect to see Santi Cazorla play another game in Arsenal colors. It's devastating, but I don't expect to ever see him put the Arsenal shirt on again.
I would agree. Yeah. Sadly, I would agree.
And I mean, shit, Lucas Perez, we haven't mentioned him yet. He's off. He's off this summer.
Definitely gone.
So we need to fill that position. We need to fill Santi Cazorla's position. There's a lot of shit that needs to get done.
I wish we'd fill Coquelin's position with a statue, honestly.
Right, but he's a serviceable squad player. If
everyone else on the team was incapacitated, then sure.
Put him on for Ozil when we're defending a 2-goal lead, 3-goal lead at the end of a game.
Maybe a 5-goal lead. I feel comfortable with him coming in.
That's fair.
So looking at the positions that you just mentioned, and I think you're spot on about all of them. Let's start with the striker position. Now, you and I think are kind of the same mind on this with the Mbappe rumors. Believe it when I see it, because listen, I mean, I would love it. I mean, I think we both know it would change the face of the club if you sign him, because it makes Arsenal a destination of choice. It shows that the young up and comers are still choosing Arsenal. And quite frankly, it puts you on people's minds again. People start talking about Arsenal again. And that brings other talented players. That probably makes Alexis and Ozil stay if you sign him before those guys make their decision. For me, there's a couple things that come into mind. Number one, he's been a Real Madrid fan. He's got Cristiano Ronaldo posters on his wall from when he was a kid. Zidane likes him. Zidane's French too. Don't forget, just because Arsene Wenger is French, Zidane's French too. And they can compete with any offer we make, and they can surpass any offer we make in terms of wages. The one thing they can't necessarily offer him is guaranteed starting spot. Monaco, if he stays at Monaco, those guys are being, his teammates are being swept up left and right, you know. Bernardo Silva's already gone. There's rumors Fabinho will leave. There's rumors about Bakayoko leaving. There's rumors about Thomas Lamar. If all those guys go, all of a sudden Monaco's not a great place to stay. The thing with Wenger is, and I've always thought this, if it was the right player, I think he'd spend what it takes. But do you think there's any way he can convince Mbappe? Like, let's say Arsenal's willing to pay the fee. Do you think he can actually convince Mbappe, look, we're not in the Champions League this year, but it was a one-off. We'll be back the following year, and we'll build around you.
I do, actually. I don't really think that the lack of Champions League is going to make that much of a difference, to be completely honest with you. Because it is, we've been in the Champions League for so many years consecutively, it's a one-off. And if we keep Ozil and Alexis and, you know, if you're Mbappe, I mean, come on, man. Like, name two better players that, you know, where you're going to be able to play in front of them, where there is an opening. Name me another setup in the world where you're going to have those two people behind you setting you up that doesn't have somebody like Suarez already playing in that spot, or have somebody like Cristiano Ronaldo already playing in that spot. Because let's not kid ourselves. Ronaldo will be that number nine moving forward.
In place of Benzema, you think?
That's going to be his spot until he's 45.
It could be.
Imagine him as a poacher, as a poaching goals in the box all day.
Yeah.
Right. So my point really is that, yeah, there's other clubs that can compete and outdo us with wages. PSG, Barcelona, Real Madrid. But who's going to offer him those two players playing in behind him? I'm not convinced that even if we're not re-signing those guys this summer, that we sell them this summer. Ozone Alexis, I mean. And that's scary, but I'm not convinced that we sell them this summer, even if we don't have them locked down this summer.
And I suppose to kind of go with your point, if you were to sign Mbappe, those guys might be willing to stick around another year and say, hey, let's see how this looks. How good is this kid? Let's see. I mean, I would probably put, you know, because there does seem to be legitimate interest. Whether there's been a bid made, I don't know. My guess is we're going to push really hard for Mbappe for maybe another 2-3 weeks and get a firm answer from him one way or the other. If we're not sure, I think we move on to plan B. And for me, it's pretty clear that plan B is Lacazette.
It does seem that way, doesn't it?
And from your perspective, what do you think of that as a plan B? Do you rate him highly? What's kind of your thought as to how he would fit? Is he the star that Arsenal need?
The star that Arsenal need? Probably not. I mean, I'm not going to lie and say that I'm a big French First Division watcher. So for me to say that I know all about Lacazette, I mean, that's going to be, I'm just going to be making shit up, to be honest with you. So I don't know. I mean, is he an upgrade on Danny Welbeck and Olivier Giroud? Yeah, I think so. But Giroud continues to get into the French side over him. So is he really an upgrade? He's a different style player. Does he fit that 3-4-2-1 better than Olivier Giroud? Yeah, probably. But is he ultimately a superior player? I don't know. You know, if that other striker option is Aubameyang, again, he's a completely different striker. He's a poacher. He's not overly involved in build-up play. And, you know, I really don't know what the other option, like what other names are really out there that are going to be, you know, that type of striker that's really that star that Arsenal need, as you put it. And I think that puts it perfectly, is that star strikers, I mean, there's not very many out there.
And, you know, just going along with what you said there, star strikers, just the rumors we're hearing are Lukaku's going back to Chelsea, Morata's going to United, which actually makes a lot of sense for a number of reasons. You're hearing rumors that Belotti from Torino might go to AC Milan.
Which makes sense,
you know, because he was a childhood Milan fan. I mean, and I think he's a really, really good player, but, you know, it always seemed like he was likely to stay in Serie A. You have Patrick Schick from Sampdoria. He's going to Juventus. You have who am I forgetting? Aubameyang is looking like he's going to PSG.
Yeah.
Really, who else is there? I mean, one of my favorite strikers is Mauro Icardi from Inter Milan, but they don't look like they're going to sell. So it is like you said, there's not many other names out there. I mean, I like Timo Werner at Red Bull Leipzig, I don't see him moving because Red Bull Leipzig have tons of money, and he's a young striker. Like, I still think he probably needs a couple of years in the first division and to learn. So I'm just not seeing tons of other names unless you're willing to take a risk on a very young striker like Dolberg at Ajax or something like that. But
yeah, but you're spot on that, you know, you can't, if we were to go and sign Dolberg, he's third choice next year behind Welbeck and Giroud. You know, there really isn't, I mean, there just really isn't too many other options out there. So is Lacazette the next best option after Mbappe? If Icardi's not a real option, then sure. I mean, I don't see who else really would come in above him.
That's the thing. It's almost by default he's the next best option. Like, people who watch Serie A, I mean, sorry, Ligue 1, swear by Lacazette. You know, they say he's incredible. You know, it's surprising that you haven't seen him crack the French squad more, like you were saying, that Giroud's kind of in there ahead of him. But, yeah, I would...
To be fair, though, didn't it take Griezmann kind of a while to crack into there?
Yeah, and you know, could it be just there's established players in their setup and it takes a while?
It does seem like the French side does like to play with that target type striker in the middle, you know, whether it's Benzema or Giroud. And the only time you see Griezmann or Lacazette kind of really feature for them is when they decide to play two up top. And I could be wrong, that could just be when I've actually seen them play. But I kind of get that impression that just tactically, that's how the French sides like to play.
Yeah, I know. I think there's something to that. But yeah, I would say Lacazette's probably that plan B. It's still going to take like $60 million to get him, though. You know, so it's not like you're getting him for cheap. You still have to pay. You still have to shatter your transfer record to get
right. And if you're going to pay $60 million for Lacazette, you might as well pay 120 for Mbappe.
Yeah, because Lacazette
could very well be the second coming of Thierry Henry. You really don't. We don't know how good this kid can be yet.
Yeah, and Lacazette's already 26, so, you know,
he is what he is.
Yeah, he's. We really haven't seen him against the competition that he would face week in, week out in the Premier League. You know, so moving from there to like the midfield, and midfield, you said we need two. What kind of profile player would you be looking for in terms of style of play? Like, for me, I think you need like a box-to-box player to either an upgrade on Ramsey or someone who can support Ramsey. And then I think you need like a Santi-type player, like a needle-type dribbling, you know, guy, versatile, you know, something like that. So like the names that I've seen are Pablo Fornals from Malaga as kind of the Santi kind of replacement, and Jean Seri from Nice in France, and then Corentin Tolisso from Lyon. Those are the ones I've seen. Candidly, I don't know tons about any of them. Those are just the names that I've read. I know the most about Tolisso, and I will say that. I mean, he's a really, really talented young player. Plays with Lacazette. You know, maybe get the 2-for-1 special. I don't know.
For me, I mean, I saw Seri, however you say his name. I saw him linked with Barcelona somewhat recently. Whether that means anything, I don't know. For me, it would be Verratti and Tielemans, but neither of those are going to happen.
Tielemans just signed for Monaco.
I know. Why we weren't in for him, I have no idea, because that kid's going to be absolutely spectacular. 2 years from now, he's going to be anchoring Real Madrid's midfield. Mark it down there, whatever. Yes, 2 years from now, he will be anchoring Real Madrid's midfield. And maybe that's why we weren't in for him, because we knew we'd only be able to hold on to him for 2 years. I don't know. I mean, yeah, you're right. We do need another box-to-box. We need a box-to-box. We need a... It's meant we need somebody who can fill in that the role that Xhaka is going to play. I said two center midfielders. We need at least two, three, maybe. Four. I mean, one or two of them being younger players, right? I mean, think about it. Who else do we really have in that center in the central mid? Even if it's a 4-3-3 or a 4-2-3-1, what other options do we have at that two center midfield spot?
Elneny and Coquelin.
Right, and neither of them should be anywhere near our first team. As far as starters.
Yeah.
Bench players, yes, but neither of those two should start a game unless it's in an EFL Cup for us or a Europa League game. That's sad saying that.
Yeah. I almost corrected you there. I was like, no, Champions League. I was like, wait, nope, we're not in that.
So that's what it feels like to be a Spurs fan.
I know. Now I have to learn the Europa League anthem. I don't even know
what it's like. Is there even an anthem for the Europa League? Like, let's be real.
It's literally like womp, womp. That's the anthem.
The story of Tottenham's life.
Exactly. In terms of the midfield, I mean, you do probably need at least two. If Wilshere's gone, Cazorla is finished, and Oxlade-Chamberlain can fit in there when you need him to.
Well, maybe a wide player, man. I know Arsene talks about wanting to fit him in the center midfield, but I don't see him being tactically intelligent enough to play that position. I mean, oh, here he is. Here's Ian saying he knows more than Arsene Wenger. Oxlade-Chamberlain is not good when he has to think.
The less thinking, the better.
When he can run, just get the ball and run, he's great. But when he has to think,
That's when it falls apart. Mm-mm. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, to your question, who do we need to bring in? What type of players? I mean, box to box, holding, midfield. Yeah. But we need 3 to 4 players in that spot.
And then you mentioned another center back. Candidly, I couldn't tell you who the options would be there. Who knows? Maybe after Liverpool's fuck up today, Virgil van Dijk would be an option.
I see him going to either Chelsea or City, to be honest.
I would see him going to City now at this
point. I just get that kind of a vibe from it. I would like to see us kind of go out to the Bundesliga and grab one of those young – I mean, there's so many up-and-coming young center backs out there. You know, Nicolas Sula, Jonathan Tah, guys like that, 21-, 22-year-old center backs who have started for 2-3 years – in the Bundesliga, you know, those are the kind of guys that we should be going after.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I would love to just sign a bunch of players from Germany's Confederations Cup roster.
Dude, just raid the Bundesliga.
Yeah, that's it. That is where your young, talented, skilled, technical players are coming from right now.
And Christian Pulisic? Yes? A cheeky bid for Christian Pulisic?
I'm just saying.
Come on, Arsene.
You could see in a 3-4-2-1 right behind the striker with the free reign.
You know you want to, Arsene.
I mean, that, just hypothetically, that would
someday
revolutionize maybe the American Arsenal fan base.
If let's that do would it. Happen. I didn't even think about that, but hell yeah.
Right? Think about how many let's shirts go. That would sell. I mean, I know
he, marketing.
I think he signed an extension at Dortmund, but I mean, contracts are there to be broken. So
if we've learned anything from Hector Bellerin and Cesc Fabregas and so on and so forth, yes, like you said, contracts are made to be broken.
So
especially if they're signed with Arsenal.
So looking at the incomings, your ideal summer that you'd also consider realistic.
Do you think that James is considered realistic? Saw him linked with us from Real.
I mean, I don't know how much he would cost, but I mean, people
35, 40 million.
Oh, I think it'll take more than that. It costs like 60 or 70 to get him to Madrid.
Yeah, but he hasn't really panned out like they expected. He's not going to be that much anymore.
So, all right. So if you consider him realistic, 40. Let's say what 4 or 5 players would you say are possible?
Dude, specific names? I don't know. Really, I think what we need to do is, you know, we kind of touched on it jokingly, but we need to raid the hell out of the Bundesliga. Give me, what's his name from Leipzig? The better version of Conte.
Naby Keita.
Thank you.
Oh, Keita. I mean, Keita's so much better than Conte in terms of
exactly. How we'll rep. He'd be perfect.
Yeah, because he does things that Conte can't do. He's a passer. He's a dribbler. He's just an all-around midfielder. You know, the only thing with Keita is, do you leave the Bundesliga Champions League team to come to an English team that's in the Europa League?
Yes, because it's Arsenal.
Yeah.
Leipzig, Arsenal.
And then
one has Champions League, but one has only had is the first year going into Champions League. One is Arsenal. You know, I think as Arsenal fans, we diminish the draw that this club still has. We think that it's Arsenal. Oh, we feel sorry for ourselves. We're not in the Champions League. Nobody's going to want to come play for us. Boo hoo. You know, everybody be sad for us. No, we're still Arsenal. We're up there with, you know, as far as name recognition and worldwide popularity, we are up there with the Barcelonas and Real Madrid and Bayern Munich and United. We're up on that level. Yes, we may not have as much money, but as far as worldwide recognition and popularity, that name still means so much, even if we're not in the Champions League this year. So I don't think it diminishes our draw nearly as much as people want to make it out. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm being optimistic. But
no, I think you have a point. But that Arsenal is a global brand that very few clubs can match. I don't think we're on the United, Bayern, and Barcelona level. I think we're just in that tier two right below them.
As far as money and product on the field, yes.
Yeah, I'd say we're
as far as worldwide popular. Okay, maybe not.
We're in that Juventus, PSG, Chelsea to an extent tier, just because Chelsea's marketing within the past 10 years has been incredible where they built themselves. But the draw is still there, and it is like we were saying, maybe we're selling to these players. Look, we were just out of the Champions League this one year. We'll be back. For me, a realistic summer, I could see Lacazette. I could see Fornals. Well, I want Tolisso. He's kind of my dream midfielder. But I would say Fornals or Sarri. And then if Bellerin leaves, Hisai from Napoli. And center backs, I mean, I can't say that I know that many. So Jonathan Tah would be a good one. I'd be okay with that. So that's, you know, kind of where I'm leaning with that. You know, but it is like kind of what we've said, you know, even if we address all these needs, there's still so much work to be done. And just having watched that Real Madrid Juventus game, the quality on display at every position, you know, starting in midfield with Modric and Kroos and the wide players, you know, you had obviously Cristiano, you had Isco, and you know, you had Dybala on the field and all these guys. I mean, how big do you think that gap is between Arsenal and the truly best clubs? Not even like Real Madrid, because I think Real Madrid right now are just, their squad is on another planet. But like to the Bayerns, to the Barcelonas, to the Juventuses, to the PSGs, Chelseas, where do you think how far behind is Arsenal?
As far as ability, I don't put PSG ahead of us. There might be a little bit of homerism, but I think we're already on par with a PSG. I think as far as talent, we're on par with Chelsea. I think, and again, like I said, we're basing this strictly on talent. I think we're so hard to say, because what Arsenal team am I using as a measuring stick, right? Am I looking at it, the team with what I think it's going to be next year, where it is with everybody that I think is leading? Like, it's, I don't know. I really don't know how to put it, because I think I think the beginning of next year, we're going to look like a completely different team based on the sides that we had. You know, the teams of this past season, talent-wise, I don't think we're far off. I think we add a top striker, and we add another couple midfielders, maybe a wide. Like, we're not talent-wise that far off. But where we're going to be at the end of the summer, I can say that I've never had less of an idea than I do right now.
So keeping that in mind, and just kind of, excuse me, as we kind of wind up here, give this season a grade from A to F. You know, like, how do you consider this season a success or a failure, and how do you rate it?
What letter do I give it for typical Arsenal?
Yeah, pretty much.
I mean, start off well, struggle through the majority of the middle of the season, finish strong.
Yep, that sounds right.
Typical. Is it a success? How do you define success at a club like Arsenal? I think you define success as legitimately competing for a league title.
Oh, for one?
You know, I honestly don't think that any other team besides Real Madrid was a legitimate contender to win the Champions League. So getting into the last eight, being up there with the likes of Barcelona and Juventus and Bayern. And so I think for me, the last eight of the Champions League.
Oh, for two.
And the other thing that I would say would be winning one of the domestic cups. So one out of three. So no, it was definitely not a success. Was it a complete failure? No, because we did win a trophy. Was it disappointing? Yes. So C, if you want a letter grade, it's kind of where I think I settle out.
Yeah, I think that's where I am too. I mean, I expected more of a title challenge because you figured Pep was going to take time to adjust. You know, you knew Mourinho would take time to adjust. Spurs, you got to give them credit. They got the better of us this season.
Yeah, it's the last season they're going to do that because their team's going to blow up this summer.
I hope somebody comes hard for Dele Alli and Kane and takes them both.
And Pochettino. And
I know. I hope Inter – or not
I was
Inter,
hoping
– Inter hired someone, didn't they?
Yeah, and Juventus re-signed Allegri and Barcelona added somebody, so he's not going anywhere this summer.
Yeah, so – you know, maybe someone comes for Kane or Ali or Dyer or whoever, but
how were they that good?
They had a system and it worked, you know? It's called rotational fouling.
And nobody got hurt.
Yes. Nobody got hurt. I'm not doing anything with performance enhancing.
No, he's not stabbing his arm with a needle.
Yeah, they definitely didn't cheat to get players back healthy. No, it's not what they did.
At all.
Yeah,
they just have superhuman athletes that come back twice as fast as every other player in the world.
So they've got some super secret training methods, I think.
Yeah, I'd like to steal their trainers and conditioning people.
Exactly. But no, and also,
maybe that's what we need to do is hire those guys.
Because once we do it, we'll probably get fined by the FA. But
no sarcasm in our podcast at all tonight.
So giving us a grade, I'd say a C is probably about right. I think season started well enough. The first 3 months, we were actually very good. It kind of fell apart in December, and then it extended into January, February, March, and then we put it together in April, May. Too many bad results, you know. A draw at home to Middlesbrough, a loss away at Palace, a draw away at Bournemouth. You know, there were some other bad results in there. A loss away to West Brom, just the opening day losing to Liverpool at home because you didn't reinforce the squad properly, and eventually that came back to bite us because we just needed a draw in that game and we'd be in the Champions League. So I'd give it a C. The trophy kind of redeemed some things. Candidly, it's like you said, I've never felt such uncertainty about a summer before. And it makes me nervous as an Arsenal fan. Like, I try not to get hyped up about all the transfer rumors, but it is the nature of being a fan. You just it's the hope that kills you.
But you know what though? This year I think it's different. Here you go, a typical Arsenal fan saying this year's going to be different.
We are masochists, aren't we? Masochists.
I am the epitome of a Buffalo sports fan and an Arsenal fan. Like, god damn it, I'm the epitome and stereotype of that. But this year is going to be different. Okay, I will say that again. Why? I'll give you a reason. We are not going to have another choice. No other option. Because there are going to be so many players that leave this summer that we will absolutely be forced to add to the squad unless Arson thinks we're going to do something with Maitland Niles and I don't even know what their names are. Chris Willick.
The Jeff.
Yeah, unless he thinks that those players are really going to step in and lead us to a title, which we're not even going to pretend that that's what Arsenal is planning on.
That's when I become a Napoli fan. Mm. Yeah, but
go Dortmund.
No, but
basically my point is just that I think we're going to be forced into that change because so many players are going to leave. You know, even the ones that we don't know if Gibbs or Giroud are going to leave, but we need to reinforce those positions anyway, even if they do, even if they stay.
With better players, yeah.
Yeah. So, I think we're going to be forced into completely making over our side this year, even if Arsene doesn't like it. He's not going to have a choice.
Yeah. At this point, stubbornness is not an excuse, but I think we could take this opportunity to kind of wrap things up. I know we covered a lot of ground in the past hour and a half or so. And
I think that was great, by the way.
It was good. We got a lot out there. And,
wasn't even that rusty for not doing this thing for 2 months.
Exactly. And, certainly we'll have
heaping a bunch of praise on my shoulders.
I'm sure we'll have actually quite a few episodes over the summer because we've got U.S. men's national team qualifiers, World Cup qualifiers over the next week.
They suck.
We'll see.
I got a bad cough.
He does have a cough. I actually just sent him some meds, so he'll be okay.
Chris Arena's terrible.
I know.
Christian Pulisic's our only good player.
Sorry, I really got to get that cough under control.
I know. I got to go. I got to see a doctor tomorrow on my day off.
So they got a game tomorrow, and we'll see how that goes. Bruce, the MLS can do no wrong, and we don't need to learn anything from Europe, guy.
What was his Jurgen Klinsmann comment yesterday?
No, he said something about Jurgen, they didn't like him because he brought in too many players and the squad selection was iffy. Meanwhile, this is the genius who calls in Grand Zusi as a right back, and
Grand Zusi plays right back for Kansas City now, so.
I mean, Ramsey shouldn't play anywhere for anyone at this point. But
did he call in what? Did he call in Wando again for the?
I think so. Something? Yeah, yeah, he did call in Wando actually. So,
Bruce, our savior.
Well, that's for the gold. That's for the Gold Cup, Grant. I'll give him that. It's for Gold Cup, so no one cares about that. But somehow, somehow Danny Williams didn't get called in, but Dax McCarty did. So, if you ever wondered what side Bruce is playing, just be sure it's not. Not the side of calling in the most deserving players. It's calling in the MLS guys.
Got that right.
But that's my own cynicism coming to play. So
that's just common sense. That's not cynicism.
I'm sure we'll have some U.S. men's national team stuff to talk about over the next couple of weeks. Certainly there'll be a lot of transfer updates. Confederations Cup coming up, which will be fun to watch with Chile and Germany and Portugal and Mexico. I mean, that's going to be a fun tournament. That is actually going to be a lot of fun.
Some attacking football in that tournament.
I mean, I can't wait to watch that and break that down on here, certainly. And certainly we'll keep you abreast of all the transfer stuff. And, follow the podcast on Twitter at twitter.com/EuroSnobPod.
You remembered. It's been so long.
I know. I had to think about it for a second. I'm like, no, that's still what it's called. You can find me at UFGunnerAJ. Ian, how can the folks find you?
At GunnersFan6.
And if you see a lot of snarky tweets from me about transfers, don't be surprised because that's just my reaction to transfers.
You're just a snarky tweeter anyway.
Yeah, I have a snarky tweeter. I've received that criticism.
I think I've gotten worse too. I've gotten more and more snarky.
Yeah, it's called the Arsenal effect. Right? It's you follow this club for long enough and you turn into that. But
I just want a sports team that's good for once. Somebody please.
I was gonna say, as a Buffalo sports fan, you've seen more than most have had to deal with. So
it's absolute torture.
I do feel bad for you, and
it's awful. What is wrong with me?
You were born into an unfortunate region, and you happen to pick the one big club that is picked now to go through a little bit of a stretch of
the exact same
tough times. I see the sadness in your eyes, so I won't let you linger on.
Tom Brady's knees are just going to disintegrate, Shout out to all our friends up there in Massachusetts and Vermont and New England area. His knees are, both of his knees are going to disintegrate sometime this fall.
Probably not. He's probably going to play until he's 45 and win another.
His knees are going to disintegrate, and he's just going to go home and live his life of luxury in his mansion with his supermodel wife and never step on a football field again. And the Bills are just going to win everything and win the Super Bowl. And then we're going to laugh at you because you no longer have Tom Brady and you're not good anymore in New England. Someday, 10 years from now, my dream will come true. Sorry, I'm
Ian's going through some stuff right now, so he'll have to give him a pass. Oh, that was tough for me to listen to. Even though my dad's a Bills fan, that was a downward spiral to know.
Boy, anybody who's a Bills fan can completely relate to that little black hole that I just.
It's the hope that kills, man. Beginning of every season, it's the hope that kills, but. Hey, who knows? Maybe in 2-3 weeks, we're talking about a brand new striker signing for the Arsenal.
Hey, you know what they say about Bills fans? The one thing that they always say is there's always next year. Next year will be different. Arsenal fans the same. We say the same thing.
Unless global warming happens, then maybe there won't be a next year. So.
Oh, don't get political on me.
No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. But
this is a no politics zone.
This is the no spin zone we've got. No, that's trademark. Can't use that.
Yeah, we can't say that. We're going to have to cut that out.
Yeah. Sorry. But in all seriousness, guys, I'm glad we get back on, and hopefully we'll get you a lot of good stuff over the summer and carrying into next season.
I'm glad you ended that now that we wasted the last 10 minutes of everybody's life.
I know. Yeah. At this point, if you're still listening, I don't know why.
I really hope so, because that was the best part of the show.
All right, folks. Well, certainly have a great rest of your week, and shoot us a tweet on Twitter, and
hopefully it's not 2 months till the next time you guys get to hear from us. However, even if we recorded something next week, you might not want to hear from us after those last 10 minutes. So, on that note, thank you guys so much for tuning in tonight, and we're glad we could finally get another episode out to you. And we'll talk to you guys soon.
All right, have a good one.